Before we get started with my Dharma talk this evening, I just want to name something right now. Is what's happening in our world today, and none of us are not affected. We open up the newspaper, we go to our social media news feed, we talk to friends, and we realize that this world is on fire. It's happening in our communities, it's happening in our states, it's happening around the world. And each and every day, my heart opens up to these types of events that are happening, including another one today. And I'm weeping. My heart and my mind is trying to make some sense of it all. And oftentimes people have come up to me, whether it's at East Bay Meditation Center or other places, and say, what should we do? And I honestly have no answer other than to recognize in myself the sorrow that I'm feeling. And about a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks now, when the blatant murders happened across our country, I was enraged. Not another person, not another human being, really. And I was just enraged as a black female in America. And it wasn't until I went onto Facebook and I saw a posting from another Dharma sibling of mine named Zenju Earthland Manuel. And it was a picture of five beautiful black men children with these beautiful white doves on their head. And she said, now we need to go to our hearts. And in that moment, that was exactly what I needed. Because the rage was just pulsating in me. The fear of what's happening in our country. And in that moment, I made a commitment. And I'll tell you what it is, because I want you to hold me accountable. Here's my statement. I am a committed protective warrior walking in grace and love, fully awake and in peace. This is my commitment. I am a committed protective warrior. Walking in grace and love, fully awake and in peace. This is my commitment to me. So I needed to say this so that I felt good, you know. But I needed to put it in the room. I'm not trying to literally do anything other than actually speak this truth of mine and to let you know that my heart is weeping. I have a son who's 34 years old. There are days I fear for his life. He's a well-adjusted human being who lives in Castro Valley and has a family and all of that. And so are many others. So our nation is turning into something that I can't recognize. And I'm of a particular age that I do remember what I grew up in. So when I ask you in the last few minutes of your sit to open your hearts, breathe in a little bit for a little bit more space and spaciousness, that was really on my heart. Breathe a little bit deeper. for all sentient beings, for all people, whether it's in Nice, France, Turkey, Dallas, Baton Rouge, Oakland, San Rafael. It's here. It's affecting us. So if we can take that into our hearts today as we walk, as we do our gentle exercises, as we sit. I don't have the answers, and I don't think you do either. I don't know if right now I can't think of any. But I know we need to consistently be awake. So, thank you for that. And this evening I am going to talk about commitment. Actually, divine commitment. And I'm going to speak to it in relationship to somebody who has inspired me. And this is a woman named Deepama. And I don't know if you know of her, but I'm going to tell you a story. Last time I was here, I told you a story of, I think his name was Roberto Avalera, who found his mother to be a long-time sufferer. And we talked a little bit about that. Well, I'm going to tell you another story this evening, the story of Deepama. And actually, we're going to bring her into the room, if we can. And we're going to pass this around so that we can see this warrior love. And a few years ago, when I went to my home meditation center, East Bay Meditation Center, especially when it was over on Broadway, we're in another spot now, on 17th and Harrison. But every time I entered the sanctuary, there were two pictures on the altar. And I actually love altars. I make them in my home. I make them if somebody says, you know, we just got a call that a friend, a colleague of my wife's father had passed, so we lit some candles in holding him in his passage. I even make them at work, which people, you know, kind of give me the cuckoo eye. What is that? But one picture that was really prominent on the altar was Martin Luther King Jr. And how appropriate, this warrior, committed warrior to nonviolence, would have his life taken by violence. But he held the same principles that the Buddha did. And it was just so appropriate that here was this big statue of the Buddha and here was Martin Luther King, who had nominated Thich Nhat Hanh for the Peace Prize and so forth. And they were dedicated to the freedom of the human spirit. And then the other picture that was on the altar is one of Deepama. And when I first saw it, I had no idea who it was. And then I started to investigate her because she looked short, so I could, you know, there was, I could relate. And I knew that she was Indian or maybe somewhere in the East, not sure. And then I began to look in her life. So I'm going to tell you the story of Deepama. She was a bodhisattva, a mother, a giver, and a teacher. And even more than that, she was a committed warrior, dedicated to this practice. And the other thing is that she was and is still in this memory of hers, a woman who walked this path. And you know, there are many, many nuns in Buddhism, but for many, many years, they took a back seat to the monks. And she was so revered that there was no back seat for her, ever. Well, not ever, you'll hear the story. So it's interesting because I came to Buddhism a little bit later in my life. It was probably in my 40s, and not so much later, but you know, later in my life. And I really didn't have anyone to, I mean, I had really loved listening to Jack Kornfield. And one of the first women that I heard was Kamala Masters, who was just so divine in her speech of loving kindness. And later on, of course, I've listened to Tanesaro, who's just lovely around Kuan Yin and Sharon Salzberg and so forth. But I had not really been able to say someone inspired me. I have a great teacher named Larry Yang, and I have sat with many. But this woman, this Deepa. So here's her story. I skipped a page. So when I was 13 or 14, it's about when the time I fell in love with Buddhism, and I didn't even know it. Somebody had handed me a book called Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse. And I was 14 years old. And I ended up reading all of his books, Narcissus and Goldman and Steppenwolf and so forth, you know. So I fell in love not only with Siddhartha, but I fell in love with the writer. And what I realized is I was walking this path to find out more about the Buddha. And now, close to 50 years later, I'm finding myself on the same path. And I kept searching, you know, it was almost like I was lusting for more. And what I realized, it was right here. And then when I began to really research Deepama, I realized how perfect that little bite of Hermann Hesse was for me. It boiled down to, how committed am I? How much of a bodhisattva can I be? How can I walk this path? How do I get off the cushion? And actually, as a lay person, be that committed warrior, as she was. Deepa Ma's real name was Nani Bala Barua. She was born in 1911 in East Bengal, India. She was the eldest of six children from a close family, and she was especially devoted to her mother. Her family had a long history of Buddhism, but they didn't really practice it. I mean, maybe on, you know, much like I did in Christianity, it was, you know, the high holy, the days that brought me to church. Even though we went to church all the time, it was really something that we revered. So they only observed some of the rituals, but clearly in 1911, it really wasn't something that little girls in households did. She was a quiet child, short in stature, and she wanted nothing more than to go to school. And she had that thirst for knowledge. But the cultural norms of the day didn't allow that. So she wasn't allowed to go to school, but in the evening she sat at the feet of her father and in his generosity began to teach her. And although he was stern, he was also a very loving man. In the Indian tradition, as in many cultural traditions, at the beginning of a young woman's ministration, she became readied for marriage. So Mani, at the age of 12, was married to a man named Rajani, who was 25 years old, over double her age. He was an engineer and he was working in Burma. And their first week of marriage, they traveled back to Burma and she began to live with his parents. So here she is separated from those that she loved, especially her. She was devoted to her mom and she was the eldest of six kids. After her departure from home and her family, definitely schooling, trying to grab that piece of knowledge, whether it was through education or whatever, was just not going to happen. Nani began to stay with his parents, but he went off and did his job. So after 2 years, she realized that she needed to go where he was, and he was in Rangoon. So she boarded a boat and headed to be with her husband. And now, although it was an arranged marriage, actually, there was love that was being cultivated, which is beautiful. And their marriage had some challenges, and mostly because she was unable to conceive. And once again, culturally, of course, you want to have, you know, that's part of what a young woman, she was 12, 13, 14 years old, was to do. When Nani was 18 years old, she got word that her mother had taken ill and immediately passed away. As a result of this unfortunate sorrow, the opportunity arose for Nani to parent her 18-month-old baby, her brother. So her mother had another child. And because now the other kids were much older, they asked Nani and her husband to take in this little boy, and of course they were delighted, and for many reasons, once again, culturally, because he was a boy child. So they began to raise him in their home. And at about the age, now this was several years later, she was 18, so at the age of 35, a miracle occurred. Nani finally gave birth to a baby girl. But unfortunately, she died after 3 months. So after the death of that child, Nani took ill herself with hypertension and heart disease. So that's a lot, you know, you're 35. 4 years later, at the age of 39, after the death of her first child, Nani was blessed with another pregnancy. This time a baby girl, and she was healthy, and she called her Deepa. And Deepa actually means the light. So she became Deepa Ma, the mother of light. And that is what she would be continuously called. So as you can imagine, she was devoted to her. Now, her little brother had now grown much older. So now she gets to devote all of her love to Deepa. And right after Deepa was born, Nani got pregnant again. And again, another death of an infant. And this time it was a coveted boy that her and her husband would have birthed together. Once again, she was brokenhearted. She began to spiral again in her health. And something had come to her because she had remembered from her studies and from her childhood that maybe she should start meditation. Well, once again, the cultural norm set in, and her husband was adamant, absolutely not. And by this time, you know, she was in her 40s. And her husband said, you're way too young. So here she is. She said, you know, I'm going to run away. I'm going to go to a convent. And he said, no, you're not. So he actually had the neighbors watch her while he went to work. But what it shows, is starting to show up here, is the commitment. What she wanted. And I had just said this just today about my own practice and how I need to relook at my devotion to it through many, many exercises, all the things that are going on in the world and in my own life. I'm finding that I'm not as diligent with my own practice. So can you imagine having that kind of devotion to practice, wanting it? Be willing to run away. So soon, Deepa Ma became very, very ill again. Hypertension, heart disease. She was bedridden, and her husband nursed her back to health. And he took care of their daughter, Deepa. And then one day in 1957, Rajani returned home from work, and he said, you know, I'm not feeling very well today. And within a few hours, he was dead of a heart attack. How much can one person bear in tragedy? And what she realized is that even though this was an arranged marriage when she was 12 years old, he was probably her very first teacher through the devotion of love. So now she's in her mid-40s. She has a 77-year-old, and she has more losses than probably you and I could even bear. Her health continued to deteriorate, and she settled into herself that she was probably just going to pass away. And then something came to her in a dream. Here's another miracle for this warrior, right? She had a dream, and the Buddha appeared to her in a dream, and the essence was there was a whisper. And the whisper was, cling to what is dear brings sorrow. Clinging to what is dear brings fear. To one who is entirely free from endearment, there is no sorrow and no fear. And after that dream, she was very, very clear that she was going to head towards a life of meditation and become that devoted warrior. She found herself in Rangoon at a retreat center with Manindra, who was a famous teacher of that time. And he was really concerned because of her health, but she went anyway. And she had got her sister to watch Deepa. And Manindra suggested that Deepa Ma come to a retreat center and study under the renowned monk and scholar, the Venerable Mahasi Sadayo. As the events happened, she did just that. And so her sister moved close, was able to take care of Deepa, and she went straight into the monastery. And here she was, probably 4'7", right? Small woman amongst all of these monks. And while in retreat, she had the enlightenment that brought her into that state of being that bodhisattva. It is said that she saw a bright light, her body disappeared, and the floor disappeared, and she said everything was in pieces and broken and empty. Her deep concentration assisted in healing her heart, both physically and emotionally, and she began this path even deeper. And after just 6 days of being in this retreat, she was undoubtedly transformed. Now, I've been in retreat, and I'm sure you all have too. I have gone into some very, very deep levels of concentration, but I have never been that concentrated. I've never had I've thought I have gone into the jhanas, you know, I thought I have gone there, but I have not ever had the type of experiences that she did. And when I began to really look and study a little bit more about her, I just got enthralled at the fact that she could go that deeply, that quickly, after 6 days in retreat. So she continued to do that. The next retreat, it was only after 5 days, and she began to feel the sense of enlightenment. And after a while, she began to, this time her daughter was a little bit older, she invited her sister, her daughter, her sister's daughter. So here were four females going to the monastery with all the monks. By this time, Deepa Ma and her sister were both middle-aged women. And in 1966, Manendra left for India, and Deepa Ma, at that time, 1966, so she became a sought-after teacher. So it begs the question, here she was not a nun. She had a family. And she was a householder. So I began to think about that because, you know, in my life, I work, I teach, I study, I've been a single parent, you know, I have a household, I pay the mortgage, I do the grocery shopping. My life is so full. How many of us, you know, when somebody says, how you doing? Right now, the comment is, I'm so busy. When do we have time to be the householder? The householder who's actually practicing. We're householders because this is what we have to do to survive. When do we have time to be the householder who's practicing? So I began, you know, I'm always interested in words and definitions. And so I looked up householder, of course. And there are six things that a householder in Buddhism should have. Unwavering faith in the Buddha. Unwavering faith in the Dharma. Unwavering faith in the Sangha. Noble moral discipline. Noble knowledge or wisdom. And noble release. I'm going to give those six again, and I'd like for you just to count them in your mind and say, how many yeses are there for you? Householders. Unwavering faith in the Buddha. Unwavering faith in the Dharma. Unwavering faith in the Sangha. Noble moral discipline. Noble knowledge or wisdom. Noble release. For me, I can say the first three, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. I'm a little hooked on the release piece, you know.
Can you elaborate on that?
Why I'm hooked?
No. What it is.
Okay.
No, what it means.
The release piece? Mm-hmm. I hear this as non-attachment. The easy word is let go. The harder thing is to let go. And so some people say that if you are a householder, understanding the deathless, and you have all of these six characteristics, then you are pretty close to attaining a particular state of ardentship. Others say, no, that's not true because you need to have all those precepts and so forth. But if I just look at the first six, for a householder, for me, for my life, it's an aspiration. It's a place that I'd like to be and not just read it. So back to Deepa. She became, as I said, in 1966, a sought-after teacher. So her family, because in Rangoon there was a civil war going on in 1967, so her family moved back to India. By this time, Deepa was on her way to college. So Deepa Ma had an apartment, and she had, her sister was also in the same apartment building. And there were times when people were lining up outside of her door just to hear her, just to see her, almost like, I can't think of her name. She's a hugger. Yeah, yeah. But beyond the fact that people wanted to see her, she had developed she developed wisdom through her practice. And she had a very deep practice. And this is about the time when Western students began to hear of her. Students like Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, Joseph Goldstein, they all went over to see her in India and became devoted students of hers. And after they had done their studies in the East and in Thailand with Ajahn Chah and so forth, they returned to the United States and opened up IMS, Insight Meditation Society. And eventually in the, I think it was early 70s, they brought Deepa Ma over. And she was once again honored by all the Western practitioners here in the United States for her wisdom, her countenance, her devotion. So the statement I gave earlier about I am a committed protective warrior, she was right here on my shoulder when I wrote that. Because I realized if she could do this in a householder world, having had all of the losses that she's had, seeing the world as we see it today on fire, her heart has broken over and over again. And she could still be that devoted and divine warrior and teacher. What I know is that this path that I'm on, that you all are on, it's possible. That's the one thing that has brought me closer and closer to the Dharma, is the possibility of freedom. So here are some reflections I just want to read about her, and you'll get an idea of how she was definitely revered. Everything that I feared most, losing my husband, losing my children, had happened to Deepa Ma. And yet here she was, tranquil, equanimous, and cheerful. To see her with the same causes for concern that I had, but without the worry, was inspirational. Sylvia Bornstein. In Calcutta, a student of Deepa Ma's and Manindra, who had become financially successful, held a big celebration to bless a new house. I walked up the stairs with Deepa Ma, and helped her with her shoes. People were talking and eating. The stereo was on, and the buoyancy in the atmosphere was like a champagne party. The room was charged with an excited, loud energy. Deepa Ma walked in the door and in her steady, even-paced way, immediately made a beeline to the Buddha across the room. When she was in front of the image, she got down on the floor and began bowing right in the middle of everyone eating hors d'oeuvres and celebrating. I realized that for Deepa Ma, no matter what was happening, she had only one aim, and that was the truth. That was from Ajahn Tenasanti. Just a few more reflections. Deepa Ma's greatest gift to me was showing me what was possible and living it. She was impeccable with effort. People with this ability to make effort are not disheartened about how long it takes, how difficult it is. It takes months. It takes years. It doesn't matter because the courage of the heart is there. She gave the sense that with right effort, anything is possible. Joseph Goldstein. She said, if you are a householder, you have enough time. Deepa Ma told me. Very early in the morning, you can take 2 hours for meditation. Late in the evening, you can take another 2 hours for meditation. Learn to sleep only 4 hours. There is no need for sleeping more than 4 hours. From that day on, I cut my sleeping time. I would meditate until midnight sometimes, or get up early in the morning at 2 or 3 to meditate. Ma told us we had to stay healthy so we can continue practicing. She said observing the 5 precepts every day would keep me healthy. And this is her sister, Barua. There might be 1 or 2 more. Deepa Ma taught that the mind is all stories, one after another, like nesting dolls. You open one, and another one is inside. Open that one, and there's another story about that. When you get to the last nesting doll, the smallest one, and open it, inside of it is what? It's empty. Nothing there. And all around you are empty shells of the stories of your life. I recognize that so strongly. I've oftentimes heard it, and I actually see it as a film. My thoughts are like a film, waiting for the editor to splice it. But it keeps continuing. Even in my meditation, sometimes it just keeps continuing. And when I get to the last frame, there's emptiness. This is where I sink. I think we all have our stories of our own, what we would call awakening. I just heard a story when I walked in from a practitioner here who said in her meditation she had seen how she was wanting everything to be in her book. And through her meditation, what arose in her was that she didn't really have a book. And we all have our sense of that period of awakening. For me, it was about 18 years ago, and I was at a retreat at Spirit Rock. And I was very quiet, very diligent. And at the time, it was a very small circle of people, and we had a talking stick, much like the microphone there, and we had counsel in the upper hall, in the large hall, and we were able to pass the talking stick around. And all of the Dharma talks had been about really the Four Noble Truths. And on the very last night of the retreat, I picked up the stick, and I was the last person on that very night, and I picked it up. And for me, what I realized is that what had been causing me so much suffering for most of my life had been my attachment to having things exactly as I wanted them. And once I realized it was that clinging, it was that craving that I wanted, it was how I was holding on, and then the disappointment would happen afterwards. My knees buckled and I wept like a baby. How could I have waited all those years to know that? As I left the meditation hall that night, and as you know, in some retreats, they say, you know, don't talk to the person, don't look at them, let them feel it, don't touch them, you know, even in walking meditation, keep your eyes down. And what I know is that something happened for me in that moment. I left the hall and went straight. If you have any recognition of the upper hall, there's a bathroom very close at Spirit Rock. I walked in the bathroom and it was as if I was in the corner crying and weeping like a baby. And three women came up to me. One was a woman named Shahara Godfrey. One was Alice Walker. And one was a woman named Olivia. And they held me like a baby and allowed me to weep, because that is actually culturally what we do, to not touch, to not look, to not hold. And I realized the importance of that touch. But I also realized the importance of that moment. I realized that if I let go of the attachments, that maybe I would find a little bit more space. So we all have had those moments of awakening. Deepa Ma had it early on in her meditation practice. But what it really speaks to, she really wanted this. How devoted are we to our practice? To the possibility of freedom. The mere possibility of awakening and actually walking this path, this world, this day, in our household or life, with the bits of freedom. How devoted are we? How much of a warrior are you? As householders, we can do this. We can become the bodhisattvas. When we bow to each other, what are we bowing to? The Buddha nature in all of us. I'm making a commitment to practice like Deepa Ma, to become awake, stay awake, to be the householder who actually steps along the path with sure-footedness. I really encourage you, if you can, to find this book, Deep Knee and Grace. And this is the story of Deepa Ma. Some people have questioned, you mean she really saw, she walked through walls, she saw the floor disappear, all those things. I don't know. but she's inspirational for me. She is teaching me, even today, even as I speak this, she's showing me how I can do this. I can be the bodhisattva, I can be the householder. I can still conduct my daily life and do it in a way that is wholesome. And it requires effort. I have a saying, remember to remember. Just remember to remember, R2R. Remember to remember that you can be that dedicated, devoted warrior. Deepa Ma has, 10 lessons I'm going to read you. Very short. Lesson number one. Choose one meditation practice and stick with it. If you want to progress in meditation, stay with one technique. There's more to that, but we're going to keep it short. Lesson number two, meditate every day. Meditate now. Don't think you're going to do any more of it later. Lesson number three, any situation is workable. Each of us has an enormous power. It can be used to help ourselves and to help others. Lesson number four, practice patience. What did I hear? Not easy. Patience is one of the most important virtues for developing mindfulness and concentration. As she said, it's not going to happen in 2 months. It may not happen in 2 years. But it will happen. Lesson number five, free your mind. Your mind is all stories. The framework of my life. The film. Lesson number six, cool the fire of emotions. Anger is a fire. And like I had said 2 weeks ago, I was enraged. I could feel the fire burning in me. And until I was able to look and feel into those emotions and actually witness it, was I able to find a place to cool it. Lesson number seven, have fun along the way. I'm quite happy. If you can meditate, you will always be happy. Doesn't mean that things are not going to arise as they do. But it's not that serious. Lesson number eight, simplify. Live simply. A very simple life is good for everything. Too much luxury is a hindrance to practice. Lesson number nine, cultivate the spirit of blessing.
Of what?
Blessing. If you bless those around you, this will inspire you to become more attentive in every moment. And we know this practice is a moment-to-moment evolution, and might I say revolution, of our own minds. And the last lesson from Deepa Ma, it's a circular journey. Meditation integrates the whole person. It's not just the mind. It's the body. It's the feeling tones. It's the emotions. It's allowing ourselves to actually look at the possibility of being a true bodhisattva in this life, right now. I am committed I am a committed protective warrior, walking in grace and love, fully awake, in peace. Thank you. And I'll ring myself out. So we have just a few minutes for any questions or comments or ideas about how you can be that warrior, that bodhisattva warrior. Yes, Mark?
Your commitment and your statement is so beautiful. I always pause a little bit before making those like deep commitments. Because I find for me, I get into cycles of judgment when I fall short. My guess is, right, that on occasion that happens to you, just once in a while.
Yeah.
And so, but I also hear the authentic and sincere sincerity in your commitment. So I'm not saying like that. So just like dealing with those disparities, if you will, when you're coming at it that way, I'd just be curious as to how you have found to work with that.
For this particular commitment for me, it's much like Martin Luther King said, the urgency of now. This commitment to protect my family, my community, to protect the lives of those that I love and those that I don't know, seen and unseen. To stand in the fire and not shrink back. I am willing to be burned a bit and maybe not achieve it to the fullness of my commitment. But I'm willing to stand in the fire.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing something so personal.
Do you have anything to say to us cowards?
You know, I think that all of the teachers, whether it's Tipa Ma, Ajahn Chah, Menendaji, whomever it is, and our Western teachers as well, show up. Show up for you first. You know what's in your heart. You wouldn't be in this room if you weren't on this path to full awakening and understanding what freedom is. And if you can reckon with that in yourself, you can expand that spaciousness out to the freedom of others. For all humankind. For all human beings. I just want to say that as I look out, I really thank you. For receiving in this moment the tenderest part of me.
Thank you.
And in that tenderness, there is still the warrior. Let us not forget that. We can weep, our hearts can weep for what's happening. And we can still hold very, very true to this path and to all the others that are out.